The Brendan O'Connor Show on RTE Radio 1 with All Care Pharmacy. Care and protection for the whole family's health at All Care, taking care of communities across Ireland.
Now, I think another thing that's happening to people as we kind of take our head out from under the pillow, if you will. And I think we've all been head down in survival mode and we're starting to look around now and maybe in a sense survey the wreckage and become aware of, we're starting to think more about, wow, what happened there and what damage has been done over the last year. Dr. Austin O'Carroll, good morning.
Good morning, Brendan. How are you?
I'm good, thanks. Now, Austin, you tweeted this week, "Today I found myself snapping at a worried patient with a long, long list. Emotionally, I heard the spluttering of a newly lit match and heard echoes whispering, burnout." Have you suddenly realised that you're exhausted after all this?
Brendan, I don't know if you know the story of the frog in boiling water, mm-hmm. where if you put a frog in boiling water, it'll jump out, whereas if you put it in cold water and gently heat it to boiling, it stays in. I don't know if it's true, and I have no intention of finding out, but often what happens, I find with myself, and I think it would be the same for other doctors, is that you don't realise how tired you are, and it isn't until you start seeing yourself do things that you shouldn't do, such as being unkind to patients, or losing the temper, or getting angry inappropriately. And so when I saw myself doing this, immediately I felt really guilty and had to apologise to the patient. But also I sort of knew myself from past experience that this is a sign that I'm exhausted.
Yeah.
It's been a long, long winter.
I bet, yeah, and I'm sure there are probably a lot of GPs and healthcare workers feeling that way. And
yeah.
Of course, you probably couldn't take much time off, can you?
No, basically since September, I haven't had much time off. Even over the Christmas, we had to be on call a good bit because I'm working with the homeless sector where we were managing the COVID positive cases in the sector. So literally, even when days you did have off, you were on call and. I haven't had a proper break since then. I'm looking forward to a break, but I'm sort of waiting for the vaccinations to happen.
Yeah, because you've got that on top of trying to deal with people who presumably a lot of people coming in who haven't been at the doctor in a while either. So they've a lot going on as well. And then vaccinations too, yeah?
Well, there's two things. There's one is the vaccinations are really adding an extra pressure. And in two ways, one is that there are a lot of work to do at the clinics. Now, the clinics themselves are fantastic experiences because everyone is such good form and there's a real joyous feeling. But what happens is you have to put a lot of work in. And then because you've taken out a lot of doctors for a day or two, there's a backlog of patients then waiting to be seen the following week. And that backlog builds every time you have a clinic. So then people are getting angry because they've been waiting for appointments. And that just adds to the pressure and the workload of the GPs. And other healthcare workers are in similar situations and care workers in the homeless sector as well. So I think it'll be right across the caring professions. This is happening.
Yeah. And listen, you mentioned in the tweet that this patient came in with a long, long list. How are people that you're seeing? What are you seeing with people?
Definitely, I'm seeing there's two things that struck me. One is, everyone's aware of the mental health issues. It is definitely there. People found that tough, the long isolation. We're social creatures. We like to keep in touch with people. And going down to the shop, having a chat in the shop, meeting people en route, even the shopkeeper, they're all really what keep us connected and keep us buoyant.
Mm.
And that, a lot of people, particularly older people, have been disconnected, and you can see the effects. The other big thing I've noticed is older people...
Just going back to that a second.
Yeah.
So will reconnection mean a lot of people will bounce back? So if we can start reconnecting and if the vaccinated older people can start reconnecting, will that right itself then, do you think?
I think that's a huge part of it. I mean, I think often we talk about our mental illness when it's really just about unhappiness and loneliness.
Yeah.
And that is we're communal creatures and we need communities. So I do think opening up to families, being able to visit their parents, being able to visit your friends, being able to get out to the shops, being able to go to your clubs, they really will bring a major part, address the vast majority of the unhappiness that's out there as a result of COVID.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And sorry, you were going to say a second thing you're saying.
Second thing I think is that this is a thing that struck me really strongly was a lot of older people coming in looking very frail.
Yeah.
And I think what to do is when you're older, you literally have to keep moving, because once you stop moving and doing the exercise, you lose your muscle mass. And I saw a lot of people who over the year had suddenly come in using sticks, using walking frames. And I think it's because they're not doing the usual walking to the shops, walking around. That has really, was quite noticeable. And I think it's really important that we get older people out moving again and walking and getting as much exercise as possible to keep that ability.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, older people, a lot of them have got much older, haven't they? And look, like I'm young enough-ish myself, but I do sometimes feel 10 years older after it all. Seeing as you're a doctor, and there's probably a lot of people do feel a bit burnt out now and suddenly realising it, what do you do to look after yourself, Austin?
Well, I do a number of things. First of all, is I'm a big fan of exercise. So I go cycling 5 days a week. I actually was up in Glencullen this morning. It's a beautiful day out there at the moment. And I find that helps me a lot. I also have my own personal counsellor, a man called Patsy Brady, who I see every 6 weeks. And I use him to bounce off things that are stressing me out. So if I see myself doing things like getting angry, or I find difficult cases, then I explore it, and it helps me be aware of how I'm feeling.
Okay. Would all GPs usually have access to that?
Not all GPs. I know a few GPs who do have that. I also know I run a GP training program, and I have worked with this wonderful Dr. Ming Rawat, who runs mindfulness-based training program for GPs and trainees. So a number of GPs will do counselling, mindfulness, yoga-based stuff. But I think... more should. I think it's really important to have that ability to talk to someone. But GPs also do things like small group sessions with the ICGP, which are very good for meeting each other and bouncing, frustrations off each other and exploring these frustrations. So I think there's a number of ways GPs can explore it, but it is well known that the rate of mental illness amongst GPs and the rate of suicide is significantly higher, and of substance misuse
and abuse of
so, and they, yeah. It is really important. So I would encourage all GPs to have some form of, whether it's your group, whether it's your mindfulness, whether it's your yoga or your counselling. Absolutely, it's essential that we need to self-care.
It must be very tempting after you come home after a long day like that, and if you're losing your empathy with people and everything, must be very tempting to lay into the wine then, is it, and put it all behind you.
The first part of the lockdown, I was drinking most nights, and I'm not a big drinker, but I noticed it and I had to stop it. So it is definitely that. I mean, when you come home, I work all day with people. My partner's an artist, so she works all day alone. So I come home and I don't want to talk to anyone, and she obviously wants to talk. So drink obviously helps, but I had to stop that because you have to be aware it is a significant risk for GPs and doctors.
Yeah, I think a lot of people's drinking arc was that they were drinking every night for a while and thinking, well, this is a temporary thing, I'll do what I need to do to get through it, and then they realised, okay, I can't actually keep this up like this. You mentioned your work with the homeless there. How did COVID affect the homeless population in unique ways, Austin?
Well, in fact, it's a really good news story, because we expected homeless people are much sicker than the general population, and we were really worried if they got infected that they would, we'd have a lot of deaths. And so we actually had a great response between the HSE and the DRHE, who combined together to develop a plan, along with a number of homeless health agencies such as Safety Net and GMQ, and all the housing agencies as well. So everybody was on board, and we had this fantastic response that actually resulted in almost, there's only 4 deaths, which was much less than we'd expected.
Oh, okay.
And in fact, we have a lower rate of infection in the homeless population than the general population at the moment. Now, since Christmas, it's got a bit, with the new variants, it's got a bit worse. So we were really anxious to get the vaccinations because...
And that'll be Johnson & Johnson, you'll be hoping to get to that cohort, yeah?
Well, we'll take anything we can get, but Johnson & Johnson will be the ideal, because obviously it's a one-shot. So in homelessness, because so many people are mobile and difficult to track down, the one-shot Johnson & Johnson will definitely make a massive difference.
Okay, Austin or Carl, thank you very much for that words of wisdom there. And listen, I'm sure you'd agree with this. There's an emailer saying it'd be good to mention the admin staff and GP surgeries that are frontline, equally stressed and under pressure. Very little mention of them, and without the clinical training of facing the realities of a pandemic. And I'm sure you'd agree with that. And listen, chemists and pharmacists around the country as well, I think, have been doing an extraordinary job. All right, Austin or Carl, thank you very much. Not everybody is agreeing about that the outdoor drinking is that harmless. But like there are a lot of you saying, well, like somebody says here, surely turning parks into big open beer gardens and commandeering street space is now the only show in town. We should not forget how pointless the industry bickering over 2 metres versus 1 metre was last summer. It's about the provision of clean air, not hand washing. Let the hospitality industry prove they can do indoor dining safely first. We can do outdoors in the meantime. But equally, Texter, I don't think everyone's going to agree that we turn all the parks into big open air beer gardens and commandeer all the street space. And there are various people like people with vision impairments and stuff don't love the whole idea of tables all over the street either. And a lot of families who want to go to parks probably don't agree with us having our points. But I think it does look when you're around the place as if most people are kind of largely behaving themselves, staying in little groups, and it's all quite good natured and everything. So look, let's hope we can keep that up for the summer. All right, let's take a break.
Brendan O'Connor on RTE Radio 1.